This week on Redwood Wonk, we're going to be discussing the government shutdown and how that affects you. It's now the two-year anniversary of the war in Gaza, October 7th, 2023. And finally, military on the streets of America, what that means. And we have to bring up Pam Blondy and Stephen Miller and what they said this week.
Good evening. You're either watching or listening to Redwood Wonk. My name is Eric Kirk.
And I'm Matthew Owen.
And we're here to discuss national political news of the day, and we've got so much we're not going to be able to cover it all, but we're going to start with the government shutdown, which is over a week old at this point. We have had shutdowns before, but this one feels a little bit different. The Democrats are refusing to go forward because they do not want the subsidies for the medical care to end, because that could lead to tens of thousands of people who simply can't afford
millions, tens insurance. Of millions.
What's that? Ten, pardon.
Tens of millions.
Tens of millions of people who can't afford coverage. And we'll get into it a little bit, but there's actually starting to be some cracks within the Republican Party. Marjorie Taylor Greene kind of broke from the Republicans, saying we really need to address the issue of health care.
Okay, things are crazy in this country when I agree with Marjorie Taylor Greene. I just want to say that up front.
I know. Well, I mean, she's been pretty decent with regard to Epstein, and all of a sudden now she's a healthcare advocate. So what's going on, Matt?
Well, I think what happens is in the Republicans' latest continuing resolution, they wanted to get rid of the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. That's what kept healthcare premiums affordable. It's like if you go to work for a private company, typical premiums around $2,400. I'm just throwing out a number here, $2,400 a month. You pay $800 as an employee with your spouse and kids, and your company picks up $1,600. What the Republicans want to do is get rid of that employer, or in this case, the government subsidy, and your rate would go from $800 a month to $1,600 to $2,400 a month. It would literally tell families, do we want to buy food, or do we want to have medical insurance, or maybe we're going to go without medical insurance and pray none of us gets in an accident, pray none of us has a bicycle accident, none of us get some sort of weird health issue that we have to go to the doctor and pay retail price for. I think the Democrats are standing firm, as they should, and all this is where the Republicans can give additional tax cuts to billionaires and corporations.
Now, so far, the majority of the public seems to be with the Democrats. That may not last.
And there's a reason why. Who's in control of the White House? Who's in control of the Senate? Who's in control of Congress? Right. Who is failing the country right now?
Now, what's your take on it?
Boy, jumping right in. I think the shortest possible version here is that both sides currently, or at least up until the present, have seen it to be in their best interest to kind of hold the line. From the Democratic side, I think that the leadership wants to be seen as doing something, anything during these times when they haven't really been able to impact or move the needle on most policy issues. This is evidence of a pulse. And, you know, of course, from the administration side, you know, this is part and parcel to cutting programs that they've been cutting the entirety of this administration, and part of the larger budget of, you know, their priorities, where they're cutting spending from any sort of program or policy or department or agency that would shrink the government or kind of meet, check the list of their priorities. So up until now, as I said, I think that they both wanted, both sides kind of wanted it this way. There have been cracks. I mean, I'm not sure what your guys' observations are, but I think there have been cracks that it will look bad for Republicans ultimately because of their control of all the elements of the federal government.
They're in charge of the government.
Yeah. So they're going to see at some point the needle move a little bit on the blame game. And that, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene from their side, yes, has already come out and said that their health care stand is not consistent with her personal values and conceivably family
values. Let's put that in there. A lot of these are the red states and the red counties.
Absolutely.
That have lower income populations that are going to be the most affected by this.
Yeah, I forget the exact number, but it's like 70-ish percent, I think, of the
That's
people
huge.
Affected. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, healthcare is one of those issues that the Democrats have done well on. and taking a stand on has been successful for them in the past. And it ought to be, because it's really one of the most important issues that affects the most people. So it I mean, granted, people are going to face problems with a government shutdown, so things could change and they could start, people could start to lose patience with both parties. But as you point out, they run all three branches of government. There are a lot of people that don't really understand the whole filibuster thing and are saying, hey, it's just one issue. Why aren't you even talking to the Democrats about it? And I think one of the things we've seen in the news is there isn't a whole lot, and there might be some backdoor, you know, backroom discussions going on, but why isn't Trump negotiating, you know, the great, what is his book, you know, the Art of the Deal? Why isn't he using his negotiation powers to come to some type of compromise? Because, you know, he doesn't compromise. That's weakness. And he may have to.
And the other thing too is federal employees are now working without a paycheck. I don't know about you, Eric. Do you have any employees at your company?
Yeah.
They would tell them, hey, I need you guys to show up. Sorry, we can't pay you for a couple months, but I need you to show up and do your work anyway. You know what they would tell you real quick? Let me just show you a middle finger what we think about that idea.
We may have to blur that out later, but we, you know, on, one Gordon. Of the things that you know, Trump has also threatened to punish the Democrats is to not just furlough workers, but actually fire them, lay them off. I mean, what does he think that's going to?
This is Russell Vaught in March of 2025.
Well,
we're going to shrink the government.
I mean, he's usually better at politics than that. That is just an absolute, like, you're going to lose people on
that.
Not, I mean,
they're not talking about firing all the people. They were initially said, if you get furloughed, we're going to fire you. Well, they pulled back on that because there's tens or hundreds of thousands of federal workers, especially in Virginia. Virginia's probably the number one state of federal workers, going, are you insane? You're first going to furlough us and we have no say in the matter. Next thing, we're not going to get a paycheck. Next thing, we're fired because you furloughed us? So I figured someone on the labor board came down and said, nah, you can't do that. That doesn't work.
And we didn't get a jobs report this month because of the shutdown, but we did get the private sector one, the one where the businesses keep track of it, and it showed a loss of 30,000 jobs where they had been expecting a gain of 45,000 jobs. So the only news is a loss of jobs, which, by the way, that has been more accurate, at least in the short run, than the jobs report of late anyway. So does he really want to add to that by laying off tens of thousands more? I mean, you know,
it's,
I don't know what he's
luck.
Thinking, you know, but he's certainly not helping people out for the midterm elections.
And I'm going to throw one more thing in there. Do you know what's going to end this whole federal furlough shutdown BS? Travel, air traffic controllers, TSA, et cetera, because so many Americans travel. Burbank had a situation, Burbank Airport in Southern Cal. They had no air traffic control for, I forget, it was 3 to 5 hours. Well, backed up everything because you have connecting flights and people are screaming. And you know who they're pointing to? The guy in the White House. It's his fault. I can't
and
travel.
That was going to be my prediction. So now I've got to think up another one before the end of the show. But that's true. Air delays were going to be what brought everybody to the negotiation table. I guarantee it's going to be there.
So I will just add in that, you know, over the prior months and years that we've talked about the Republican Party's transformation under the Trump leadership model, air quotes, they've really benefited from really vilifying government workers, vilifying government overreach, government spending, all things really in the name of team building, agitation, otherizing. And so I think that they kind of dipped into this playbook to say, oh, and by the way, we'll just lay off more people during the shutdown. We'll just not pay people during the shutdown. I think that that's not really, those were geared towards that same kind of the momentum of team building when it comes to this leadership style, not so much reality or legality.
And this is all Russell Vaught in Project 2025. It's literally in the book if you want to read it. So for every Republican who voted for this, and now you've gotten furloughed, You voted for what you got. I don't act surprised. They told you up front what Project 2025 was, and you ignored it, and now you're furloughed.
Well, but Trump, when he was campaigning, said he didn't know what Project 2025 was, so maybe they believed him.
Russell Vaught, who's now running his budget, was the main author of Project 2025. That's your first point.
I'm not saying it was believable. I'm just.
I understand. By the way, Trump lies with everything he says, so don't act surprised. And by the way, where's that Epstein report? Still waiting for it. Unredacted. I want to see the. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republic. I want to see the bad, wealthy guys in there.
As do I. If Clinton, had sex with underage minors, so be it. I mean, it's got to
face the consequences.
Yeah. At any rate, they're not letting is her name Grijalva? Johnson's not swearing her in because the minute she does, I mean, Johnson is basically protecting the Epstein,
Everyone on the far right's covering up for the big guy.
Yeah. Oh, and for everybody on that list.
And I think people across the country are starting to realize, is Trump on the list with underage women? Well, 20 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. All right, anything else to say on the shutdown?
It needs to end now.
Yeah, it is. He is keeping the parks open and is, of course, keeping the Kennedy Center open because he's on the board. I don't know. I guess they've got some money going on that. And the ballroom is still being built.
I would say one last thing is some people have said, I think Trump and some of his colleagues or administration members, they've been saying, hey, we'll have more power. Like Russell Vaught, for example, we have more power now during the shutdown. But the truth is that if you have a million more people that take their orders from you in place, you really can move mountains. And so it's really not even in his own best interest, really. He has more, this administration has the ability to do more things the more people are responsive to them. So they'll realize this, I think, too.
And one more thing, if you haven't seen the photo, Marie Antoinette Trump, they superimpose his face on Marie Antoinette. While the masses are suffering, Trump builds a ballroom.
Yeah. I'm wondering what's going to happen with that ballroom in the long run. Will future presidents keep it or turn it into something?
And the update little meme is let them eat top ramen.
All right. That was what I had in college. I had a book, 101 top ramen, things you can do with top ramen. But back then you could get top ramen at 15 cents a package.
For sugar and salt.
Yeah, pretty much. But you put eggs in it and stuff. Anyway. If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
Listen to Redwood Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
All right. What's our next topic? You want to do the tariff? Or what's that?
Gaza, the 2-year anniversary.
All right. We are 2 years and 1 day. We are maybe close to a deal.
They announced it actually in the last hour that we're closer than we've been.
It's a framework and maybe we're close, but and I have to say this, who started this war on October 7th, 2023?
Well, Hamas.
Everyone at Cal Poly Humboldt seems to forget this because they all wear their little scarves out there and say, oh, but this is what happens when you start a war. They're easy to start and they're hell to end.
Well, it is hard to end, but what are the terms now? Have the terms been changing?
The same thing they've been for 2 years. Give us our hostages back that you took on October 7th. There's still 120 hostages. They're not saying how many are dead and how many are alive. And would you want to be kept hostage in some dank
One of the problems that have been speculated is that Hamas doesn't even have them all, that there might be splinter groups that has them. And how are they going to deal with that? And what is...
I'm rolling my eyes here, Eric, because unless you get us all our hostages back, there is no future.
So are they making a promise they can't keep, or have they grabbed them?
This is the problem when you negotiate with terrorists. They have no desire to keep their side of the bargain.
Well, even if they do, can they? I mean, that's the question, because I think that's one of the reasons they haven't done it. But I assume if they don't have them all, they've been talking about it. So, you know,
I kind of let you guys run with it a little bit, and we can have, you know, we can have fun with the simple nature is Israel going to get the hostages back? I think that that's kind of the most simplistic level of it, right? So the leadership of, let's start, you know, breathe, take a breath. The leadership of Hamas has been pretty clear since the beginning of August that they want to give the hostages back. They don't want to be part of the leadership. And really there's been the foot dragging has come from Israel's sort of unwillingness to accept that this was actually going to happen. Trump tried a couple of times to put forward plans. One was the Riviera on the Mediterranean, and then now is the peace board and Tony Blair coming in as the viceroy of Gaza. This is the new model. And so what the leadership of Hamas has said, I think, and you guys, this is all out there. You guys can read it for yourselves. But what they basically said is, we're going to go ahead and promise everything we can promise to get these hostages back, knowing that we trust Trump. We trust that Trump is the only person who can actually put Netanyahu into the position of actually advancing this a little bit. Obviously, Matthew, to your credit, yes, October 7th, tragedy. There was a mission, and the mission was you know, contemptuous, disgusting. Right. So their intention was to move the ball on this situation that's been going on for 30-ish years. But if you ask, Musa Abu Marzak, who's one of the senior Hamas leaders, what he says is, look, we meaning Hamas and two other affiliated entities, meaning that their team, their different various groups that have a degree of power still, they have 20 living hostages, and they are aware of 28 hostages that are under rubble. And so what they're saying is, Israel pulls back from the populated areas, allows these 20 hostages to be released without soldiers nearby, this first line of defense that Trump delineated, and then they'll do that on date certain, right? So that's really what they're negotiating for now. Secondarily is that these troops would also, you know, pull away from the areas where excavations need to begin to try to uncover these other 28 people. And so that's really what they're talking about. And in return for that, Palestinian jail, people that are in Israeli jails that are Palestinian, about 2,000 of them, I think the number is, that have been arrested since October 7th, they'd be released. And so really what they're, the nitty gritty is, can some of the leaders, these spiritual leaders, these political leaders, these military leaders, can some of those people that have life sentences, there's 250 of them, can those life sentence people be included in that group or not? And they're going to fight name by name. But the idea is, what's next, right? And so they get these 48 people, 20 now, 28 when they're dug up from the rubble. Netanyahu can check the box. We got everybody home. Trump could check the box. We got everybody home. Let's assume goodwill on that. Who knows what's really going to happen? But then the next question is, what comes at day two, right? Like then what are they going to build? So really what Hamas has said, what their leadership has said, is like, we don't speak for the entirety of the Palestinian people. And mm-hmm. So we can't say, sure, Trump, you could be the board chief of peace and the whatever that, you know, chairman of the board of peace. and Tony Blair, can you be the new head of Palestine for this interim year period where they build up a security force of Arabs and Muslims, where they build up Palestinian technocratic leadership teams? So so there's a lot of unknowns in that second piece, and I'll stop. You know, I've been talking a long time here.
Yeah, the idea is that
they're going to build that up, and so that all still has to be worked out in a way that represents people that represent Palestinian folks actually have a say, instead of it just kind of like being overly simplistic.
If Trump's ego wasn't in it, there would be some other neutral nations who would have been the head of that board, and that board would have a expiration date, a stated one, 5 years, whatever. You know, I mean, it's that, and that's going to be a sticking point. But what I think made this happen was the Palestinian Authority approving it, along with several other of the countries. I think people are going to assume that Trump just wants the title. It's not like he's going to do any work, right? So it's like
and the Nobel Peace Prize.
But there's already people on the Nobel Peace Prize says you're not going to get a Nobel Peace Prize if you're declaring war on your own people, no matter how many other wars you stop. So that he's got a problem there with the committee. But it does sound like, you know, they're making it, but there is one problem on the Israeli side too, is that there are right wingers who may pull out of Netanyahu's coalition, in which case his government could fall, because they're not happy with it. They're not happy with the idea of releasing prisoners. They're not happy with the idea of giving up on Greater Israel. I mean, I think they were happy with the idea of moving the entire population of Gaza and making it part of Israel. And if this happens, that's going to make that a lot more difficult.
And Trump has proposed relocating 2 million Palestinians.
Right.
To where? The Arab countries don't want them because he has to build his Riviera on the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And so, you know, leaders in Qatar who were hosting the peace treaty, peace negotiations, leaders in the Arab Emirates, you know, UAE, Egyptian leaders, Turkish leaders, Saudi leaders, Jordanian leaders, they've all said no one's going anywhere. If we do that, if that's part of the plan, then this whole Abraham Accords thing is done.
Right.
The whole thing falls apart. And in fact, they all came to the table. It's as if everybody is calling each other's bluff under the umbrella of Trump saying that, you know, my ego and my sort of, I don't want to project anything negative or positive, just his presence, right? His way of being is enough for everybody to say, hey, he said he's going to make it work. And you know what? It could happen.
It could.
The one thing I got to say too is, regardless whether you're pro-Palestine, pro-Israel, the average person I'm talking to today says this is enough suffering going on. It's
absolutely
cruel. In the war, somehow, some way, we need to bring back peace. I don't care what side of the fence you're on. Vast majority of people agree with that.
I mean, if he could get to convince both sides to have mutual recognition of Palestine as a nation and have Palestinian official leadership, whatever that is, recognize Israel as a nation, I would say, hey, have the Nobel Peace Prize. I would volunteer that. I mean,
and have Palestine become an actual nation and entry into the United Nations.
Yes. Yes, I would support, if he could do that, I would support a Nobel Peace Prize for him.
Let's just go against 3,000 years of history here.
You
see, we're going to get this done.
Sure, you can give it to Trump for
I read the Old Testament, Eric. Have you read that?
Yeah, but that was
fighting 1,000+ years ago.
2,000 years ago,
that
Abraham's son and all that, you know, stuff.
Abraham and Ishmael.
So let me say this. We are talking about 67 borders still being internationally recognized. And so I want to touch on one thing, Eric, you said, because I think it's important for people too. We know that Netanyahu, his whole administration's held together by his alignment with the right, because of, you know, there's charges against him that he could, there are criminal charges for corruption.
Right, his government falls apart, he gets charged.
So he really has to keep the right wing in the fold. And so he's really staying on top of this. And what he has said is, hey, look, everybody, I don't know if you guys noticed, like, I'm obviously paraphrasing, but he's like, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but we're going to get all the hostages back and we're not going to withdraw our army. So this is a win. And so let's take the win. And there's three lines. I don't know if you guys, if we've talked about this, but there's three lines of withdrawal. One immediately, then one once this peacekeeping force comes in from Arab and Muslim states. And then there's this third line, which creates this buffer zone. So technically, from Israel's perspective, it's in the agreement for them to just maintain a buffer zone around the entirety of the border of Gaza. And that to the Israeli right, that's a win. And even if it's temporal, right? So Matthew, what you'd said about a state being created, there's like a line that says that Palestinians will get their autonomous self-rule path as part of this. It doesn't say like categorically that it's really going to be, a sovereign state anytime soon. But there's enough positive language in there that everybody could claim a win, assuming that it happens.
I mean, Rabin had talked about it, and they were on track for it for a long time until the election in 2006. Abandoned it, but it has been for a long time the two-state solution. Maybe it'll be possible, but that's we got to just stop the killing right now. So
people agree with that.
Yeah. So if you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
Listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
All right. In terms of American politics, I notice everybody's staying quiet. Nobody's being critical. Nobody's doing anything. I think they just want to see if it can happen.
So I got to give some background here on the militarization of our American cities. Have you heard the story of what happened in Portland? Trump was watching Fox News and he saw riots in Portland and said, that's it. We're nationalizing the National Guard to go into Portland. What Fox News didn't tell him, this is from 5 years ago, the George Floyd riots. Donald Trump thought this was happening today. So he freaked out and says, I got to be strong. We're sending in the National Guard. Finally, people went and actually reviewed what Fox News said and said, this is 5 years ago. This isn't Portland today. You don't want to know what's going on in Portland? Shots are flying everywhere.
Yeah. Hey. And one of his Truth Social posts was actually used against him in court. I didn't read about it.
The judge says what you're basing this on is complete fantasy.
And by the way, the judge has ruled you can't cite the Insurrection Act when there's no insurrection. You got to have an insurrection. And by the way, the judge that ruled against him was one of his appointees.
And the other thing Fox News had on, they had on someone who had masks, sunglasses, who was from Antifa.
Been on there before as different people, I know.
Antifa. There is no Antifa. It's just a group of radical people. There's no political party.
It's not even a group. It's a concept. It's a,
right.
It's
do a, I want to be Democrat, yeah. Republican, Independent, Antifa? I think I'm going to go with Antifa. It's so stupid.
Yeah. So I know the same guy was a Mexican mafia person before.
I saw that. Jesus. It's like, oh, you people can't. And if you're watching Fox News, look, there's Antifa on. They're saying he's out recruiting people every night.
So I didn't catch that we pivoted to the next subject, but I know we're elbow deep in it already. So there have been several judges just in the last few days that have come out with findings against this administration and their activities. I think one of the most important ones is District Judge Jeffrey Cummings, because he was following up on basically the idea that it was okay for these I-200 warrants, which are administrative warrants with no legal validity whatsoever, and that they were carrying around these blank warrants and just filling them out at any arrest for any reason with no probable cause, no due process. And so the judge just basically said, look, if you just look at even when Justice Kavanaugh gave Trump a wide berth, this administration a wide berth, and said, well, you can use race as a relevant factor, but it can't, the appearance or their ethnicity can't be the only reason that you say reasonable suspicion. So this judge was like, even Justice Kavanaugh that wanted to let you racially profile and round up, you know, anybody that you want within reason, this even violates that level of scrutiny. And then so that reasonable suspicion, they're saying that that's not enough. In fact, that there actually has to be some real world incident. There has to be some evidence. Something actually has to happen. And so we'll see how this plays out. But so far, it just appears that this administration doesn't really feel the need to do what the judges say. And we could talk about Stephen Miller's most recent comments.
We will talk about that. We'll talk about Pam Bondi refusing to answer whether or not the administration has to even pay attention to district court judge. I mean, she didn't answer anything. Definitely I want to point that out. There's another court ruling also that said that that another Trump appointee, by the way, in Rhode Island, who ruled that he cannot arbitrarily deny states DHS funding on the because they have sanctuary laws. I was just saying, a radical concept that, Congress gets to decide how money is spent. He doesn't get to arbitrarily decide that. It's based on the criteria that Congress sets and not his own personal agenda. Amazing. That this is considered a radical concept these days.
And did you guys know the ICE agents in Portland are in hand-to-hand mortal combat for 3 hours every night with hundreds of Antifa people?
Yeah.
Complete and utter falsehood. But Stephen Miller's repeating this on news every single night, that it's just hand-to-hand. It's like it was January 6th all over again in Portland. Hundreds of people there with baseball bats and crowbars going at it with ICE. They said there's 15 people sitting out in lawn chairs. That's what it is. 15.
No, it was worse, 4 years ago or 5 years ago or whatever. But even then, it was confined to like about a 5 or 6 block radius. And the way he kept portraying is the whole city is in flames, And it's just and there's a video going around where they go to Powell's books. They're like saying, "Are you scared?" To all of the different places in Portland, it's just not that big of a deal. But it wasn't in Los Angeles either. I mean, the military down there, the Marines are bored. They don't know what to do with themselves.
I was just in L.A. this last week, and you know how bad the war zone is there? People are lining up at the Grand Central Market to buy tacos. Yeah. That is how bad it is in L.A. It is horrible. I don't know what's going on now.
Yeah. I mean, where it's kind of rough is Chicago, because that's where ICE went in and dragged kids, mostly nude, out of the beds and separated them as they were crying from their parents, while one of the ICE agents could be caught on video saying, "F those kids." I mean, that, and so there has been violence on the streets there because that is a natural reaction when kids are involved. You don't do that. You don't treat children that way.
Or women.
Or, yeah.
Women and children.
It was just, and this is, and it's just adding to the lawlessness. And quite frankly, they keep saying, "Well, we're masked because we don't want to be doxxed." You can be doxxed when you're masked, by the way. Computers can tell who you are. They don't want, what they don't want is, they want to be masked so that they don't get prosecuted when Trump is finally out of power.
Right.
I mean, that's why they're masked.
Do judges wear masks?
Yeah.
Do district attorneys wear masks? Do our local police officers wear masks? No.
Well, we do have a new law here in California. I'd be interested to see how that actually plays out.
We're waiting to see it. Yeah, they've said they're going to ignore it. So it's obviously going to be in court. I did do a little bit of research on a recent show. The state can have some control over the conduct of federal agencies as long as it doesn't interfere with the fundamental purpose of, doesn't interfere with their ability to conduct their work, right? So in other words, if it would interfere with ICE's ability to do their job by forcing them not to wear masks, they would have to make the showing that the masks are essential for their work. And there's a follow-up law that's making its way back to the governor that says that they have to wear badges. I mean, it's and the necessity being there is that there have been crimes committed by people pretending to be ICE officers. Somebody even just got arrested doing that recently. And they've kidnapped people. They've done all kinds of things. And so it's right here. And quite frankly, they should be required to read everybody their rights. I mean, it's just, But they're not doing that. They don't do that. And it's just, but you know, we've got this going, but yes. Yeah, so we have, the order. We don't have a commitment as to, I'm not sure that he hasn't sent the National Guard to Portland yet. Right.
Allegedly they're on their way.
So, okay.
There's California troops. I actually talked to somebody yesterday. There's California National Guard deployed to Oregon currently.
And why does California National Guard go to another state? I thought California National Guard.
They can do that. Apparently, he can because they are federal, he can commandeer them under the Insurrection Act or whatever.
There's no insurrection happening.
Well, what they're claiming among...
Hang on. More shots are flying.
Yeah.
That's water, by the way, so you don't freak out on me.
So, I mean, there's several different permutations of, like you're saying, there's claims about an insurrection, non-existent, according to judges. There's also false police reports. So there's examples of ICE agents calling the police, the local police, in Portland and in Chicago, and falsely making claims about the people outside of the buildings. And then when the police come, the people say, "No, nothing to see here. I'm just a journalist. I'm just an 84-year-old person who wants to express my values." So the police are saying, "Look, you're wasting our time, ICE, by claiming there's something going on that's not going on." In the meantime, the ICE agents are up on the roof shooting rubber bullets and pepper balls at the protesters, the unarmed civilian protesters in the streets. So there's that kind of thing going on. And also, like, even grand juries. So some of these cases are going to the grand jury, and the grand juries are saying, "Look, we're going to return no bill of indictment because there's no here. It's just, this is complete fabrication." And on top of that, so that's just three examples of things that are happening in this kind of like lack of due process. But there's also now, I believe it's Chicago, if I remember correctly. Yeah. So the Block Club of Chicago, the Chicago Headline Club, the Illinois Press Association, two journalist unions, three independent journalists, and four protesters. They're filing a suit against the U.S. federal government for, quote, "a pattern of extreme brutality in a concerted and ongoing effort to silence the press and civilians." And so here's a quote. "The targeting of reporters and photographers covering demonstrators outside the ICE facility is more than assault on the press. It's an assault on the public's right to know. When journalists are silenced, the public loses access to truth about government actions." So it's you know, obviously it's the theatrics of the absurd, but there it's moving quickly, and there and the efforts to intervene are slowing the machine down, but it's you know, the jury's still out, so to speak. We don't really know if lack of due process and lawlessness is going to take the upper hand. I don't know if one of you guys wants to comment on Stephen Miller using the phrase, basically
plenary power, plenary which means authority. Absolute power, what you have in martial law. It's a strange video. I encourage, if you haven't seen the video, to watch it. He says plenary, well, under such and such statute, I forget what it is, President Trump has plenary authority, and then he stops and he freezes up. I mean, just stops talking. He's blinking. So they're saying technical, he's frozen up, but you see him blinking. And then when they start up again, he makes no mention of plenary powers again. The CNN people who are kind of backing him up, saying, "Oh, yes, we had some technical problems there," but they're being very vague about it, didn't ask him about it. I don't know if they're afraid or what, but that was a freaky moment.
Because plenary authority is basically one branch of government. It's a king. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
We have no Congress. We have no Supreme
Court.
It's
martial law.
It means full. It means full. What happened, right?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Total power.
We're going to have to start doing the Elon Musk and go, "Zieg Heil, mein Führer."
Yeah. And I think he was, you know, as they're saying, he said the quiet part out loud. I think it had stretched, but that's, and you know, one interpretation, there are a bunch of interpretations, but one of the interpretations is when that came out of his mouth, he panicked and stopped talking for a minute.
Gonna buy that one. Oops, cat's out of the bag. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's also worth watching, if you get a chance, the Pam Bondi. It was no better than the Patel or the other hearing. She answered nothing, no questions.
She didn't answer anything.
Adam Schiff listed all the questions that she refused to answer.
That was actually
he added, you know, and all she did was either refuse to answer or attack the person asking her the questions. And I want to say that I have never seen cabinet members this rude to people hearing people. Not even the last time around were they this rude. Ollie North wasn't this rude. I mean, he was bad, right? But he was not this rude to the Senate people that were grilling him. This is unprecedented to attack people, to be calling judges rogue. You're not supposed to, you know, if you're a lawyer under the rule of ethics and you attack a judge publicly, you're actually violating the rules of ethics. So for her to refer to judges as rogue, she's actually violating the ABA code of ethics. Question as to whether or not she could face discipline for that under the First Amendment. There's a lot of discussion about it, but the point is that is considered a violation. You can state your disagreements with the judge, but you're not supposed to, you know, attack them in that way. And it's just it's amazing that just the thorough disgust and you know, this coming from the person who you know, basically I'm watching her. Trump was guilty, but you know, I can understand why, how she lost, you know, the 34 counts or whatever. I mean, she was.
We understand what this whole Senate confirmation or Senate hearing was about. It was for an audience of one person. That's
exactly
it. Come out there, attack. No matter what they say, attack them. Decline, defect, or deflect, and then attack. When Senator Dick Durbin from Illinois asked her question, she says, "Senator, if you cared as much as about Chicago and crime as much as Trump, President Trump does, Chicago would be a much better place." And she just throws it back at him, no matter what they say. She actually said to Senator Schiff, Adam Schiff of California, "Did you go to law school?" He was a former prosecutor. Eric, do you have to be a law to graduate law school to be a prosecutor?
Yeah, no.
That's a joke.
Yeah, I mean, it's no, but she was saying what I think she was getting at was that those questions involve privilege, but they don't. They don't. These are were public policy questions. She should have been answering those questions.
Every single one of those questions she should have answered, she declined to. But it was for an audience of one.
Yeah.
She was belligerently critical of a handful of senators, several
to
their
face. She also had notes, if you notice. She looked down and then looked back up at the senator, and she'd move her notes over depending on which senator it was. Her staff gave her all these notes how to insult each senator from each state and say something specific about their state.
Yeah. And so on top of that, there was also this sort of, like you said, Matthew, this audience of one, there was distraction and cover and nothing to see here. Defense of the, you know, Holman's $50,000 bribe. She wouldn't answer any of that. And the handling of the
it's only on tape, but the tape disappeared. The FBI officer who handed him the bag of cash of $50,000, he's gone. He's not saying anything. So it didn't happen.
Nothing to see
here. Even though they have it on tape, because the tape doesn't exist.
And also, you know, similar, distress, I would say, about Epstein line of questioning and running that investigation as this parallel cover. Who did the cover up? And as soon as she got caught like dead to rights in a question that was really just cornering her, she would just attack that much more venomously.
Right. Yeah. Right. And who's Tom Holman, by the way? I haven't seen him in the last 10 days. No. Completely.
And you notice the attack on Adam Schiff was exactly the same attack that Patel did. So, you know, they're coming from a thing. It was, oh, you're going to go to the press and do your thing, because he does it pretty well. Adam Schiff, you know, is really good at handling that. And they know they're going to take a hit, so they're going to try to, undermine it as much as they can, but they can't. I mean, Adam Schiff wasn't my first, nor my second, nor my third choice, but I have to say, when in this setting, he's the best.
He's good.
Yeah.
Last thing. I'm not sure what you guys want to pivot to the next thing, but I think, you know, at some point in our country's history, presumably we'll have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission or worse, or some kind of
we had it one. It's called the January 6th committee. Do you remember that? Because Republicans don't. They never saw it.
For the new regime. and you know, the, she, you know, people like her will be, you know, front and center for this is the type of thing we ought to discourage in our leaders, highlight for our youth, and to a certain extent hold accountable to, if at all possible, if nothing else, just to say, let's not do that again.
And if we're lucky, we'll get 4 to 8 years of that before it changes back again.
All right. Our producer is telling us we've got 8 minutes to talk about the tariff change. Matt, you had a, you wanted to talk about what happened in August?
Oh, recently it came out that a gentleman was a fan of European soccer. So he orders a jersey from the European soccer team, $150. It gets shipped over here. UPS delivers to his home, and he says, here, you owe us tariff of $108. He's like, what? I already paid $115 for this. He goes, oh, no, that was for the jersey. Now you have to pay the tariff to get into the United States. So he has said, you could take your jersey and stick it where the sun don't shine. I canceled this transaction. He got online, said, I want my money back. This, screw this. Consumers are starting to realize the tariff affects who? The consumers. Ultimately, the companies who import the product, who are then passing it on to the computers or consumers. Fortune 500 people just came out this week and said, we're not eating billions of dollars of profits, so Trump's off our back. We're going to start raising prices because of tariffs. Some companies have said, we want to have a separate line item. Here's the cost of the product. Here's the price of the tariff. Here's your total cost. And when Trump hears that, he goes ballistic.
Yeah, they flipped out when Amazon was going to do
that. Well, he said that, and then Trump went, how much federal contracts does Amazon get from us? Those will be gone. So he's going to threaten a lot of people, but people are basically saying, we're tired of eating your tariff cost. It's not a little thing in our profit, it's huge in our profitability. And by the way, where's all this tariff money going? Can anybody tell me that?
General
we're supposed
fund.
To be bringing in billions and billions
I
of dollars.
It just goes into the general fund. We don't
are
know.
We paying down the federal deficit with it?
It just whatever Congress decides to do with it. But
Eric, you mentioned that word Congress again. I'm sorry.
Small businesses have been doing it, by the way, from the beginning of the tariffs. They've been putting, you know, this is the tariff cost. They put that on there. But when Amazon tried to do it, yeah, they got the threats. They're going to do it, and they're going to put the blame on somebody else. They don't want to take the blame for it.
By the way, there's one person in the world who likes tariffs. One. Nobody else in the entire world likes them, but one guy. That's it.
Well, a few others too. But go
and
ahead.
The other thing I read is
let's let Dave get in here. We're almost out of time.
Go ahead.
So what I was going to say is, like, lately in the last week, we've seen more about the soybean farmers. I don't know if you guys have talked
That's
about this before.
With that. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah. So we've got a situation where there's a tariff on our farmers' products. There's a retaliation to our tariffs with China, where China is saying, hey, we're just not going to buy soybeans
we're
anymore.
Buy them at
zero.
All.
Yeah. And most of the American soybeans do go to China. And so our soybean farmers are in a terrible situation. Turns out that, Argentina, for different reasons, is getting a $20 billion bailout because of a hedge fund a bet gone awry. One of Bessent's former partners said, hey, I'm going to need some special treatment here because, you know, there's huge problems in Argentina. So a $20 billion swap fund gets set up to bail out Argentina. Well, Argentina, once their solvency is kind of determined to be solidified, they go ahead and sign a pact with China to take the place. Brazil and Argentina, but the two of them take 100% of the
shipping their soybeans to
their
China.
Soybeans to China. And ours
and
are getting
nothing. Farmers get nothing.
And our farmers are flipped out. And this is obviously not a good sign for the administration, not a good look. And so what they've already floated is, you know, maybe a nice $10 billion bailout for these soybean farmers. And it's going to come from the tariffs. So you put in place a tariff that like makes it so that you can't sell the soybeans, but then you got to use that tariff money to bail out the farmers before some degree of farmer pushback becomes an escalation in the domestic scene.
I didn't get that at Harvard Business School. So no. Let me hear this again. You're going to put a tariff on that opposing country is going to give a retaliatory tariff. So they're going to stop buying my product. My sales are going to plummet. But don't worry, the government's going to take the tariff money that would initially stop my sales to put it back in my pocket.
Yep. Because you put all that money into the soybeans that are sitting in the warehouses and on the ground with tarps over them with nothing to do. What are we going to do with all the soybeans that nobody wants to buy? Oh, don't worry. The government will give you a minimum price for it just to keep you.
That's going to take an act of Congress.
Hold on, Eric, you said that word again.
Yeah, I know.
There's executive orders.
You got to get by the filibuster. I mean,
Congress? There is no Congress.
No, but it has to. They've got to put a signature on it. And I don't think that's a filibuster-proof proposal. It'll be interesting to see what he does. I mean, this is just ridiculous. And, you know, Trump to get mad at China for not buying our soybeans. I mean,
so what's going to hit American consumers? And keep in mind, people don't care about politics until it affects them. When people go to buy cars because many parts are imported, and this tariff thing has all this language about who manufactured it, where the parts come from. When you go buy the average U.S. car, or excuse me, the average car purchase in America, I think it's $48,000 now. It's ridiculous. What used to be the price of a house 40 years ago is now the price of a car. But when that car goes from $48,000 to $52,000 or $56,000, people are going to start freaking out going, whoa, here's manufacturer's just retail price. And what's this added markup thing? And when they realize that's a tariff, they're going to lose their minds.
Well, and also, you know, people don't like paying money for beef. And I have to say that it's mostly not even Trump's fault. It's just, you know, things happening. But your president, you take the blame. That's the way it works.
Biden was all to blame for high gas prices and high egg prices, correct?
Yeah.
Biden controlled the price of eggs. Biden controlled the price of gasoline. By the way, gasoline, it's not down much from Biden's highs.
No, it's not. No. And we were drilling
California.
More under Biden. But that's, you know, a lot of stuff not getting lost here. But I don't know. Now, where are we with tariffs? I don't think we have a whole lot of time left. But is anything new going to kick in, or are we at where we're at with tariffs?
We're in negotiations with 120 countries right now as we speak.
Yeah, but then we've been in that negotiation with the United States several months now. Tariff against Brazil because they're prosecuting a dictator?
Right, right.
Is that still in place?
Yeah. Yes, last I heard.
Okay. All right.
But keep in mind, they're on, they're off. They're off, they're on. We don't know. We know is it's slowing down the whole global supply chain. And like David referred to, other countries figure out how can we do business by getting around the United States, where we used to do most of our business with the U.S. They're just figuring out other countries.
No, and the sad thing about that is they're not going to come. Not all of that's going to come back.
The question.
Yeah,
China's figured out we're going to open our arms up. India's figured out we're going to open our arms up. European nations are saying, "What can we do? We want to trade with you. Just
Canada
avoid
too.
That country."
Yeah, Canada.
Canada.
They're making other deals, and they're not going to break it off. Well, that brings us to predictions. Why don't we start with Dave?
Okay, well, Eric, you and I recently did a show together where we talked about the authoritarian drift in this country, and we talked a little bit about how, you know, to a certain extent, there's like a cause and effect situation going on where, you know, there's a narrative this government is pushing that's leading towards a declaration of the Insurrection Act in slow motion. So deploying ICE to target cities, for example, Portland and Chicago, excessive use of force, overly wide use of administrative warrants, denial of due process. And then, you know, that's leading to this media strategy where the administration is overstating the conditions as a war zone, which is leading to deployment of the National Guard to further escalate and inflame the situation. And so my unfortunate prediction is that we are seeing this as a lead up to intervention in the congressional election of 2026. So I do think that we are going to see it get much uglier as we get closer to the election.
So you agree with Governor Pritzker?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, Matt.
And I'm going to dovetail off what David just said. My fear is the whole thing we saw a week plus ago with the generals. When he brought them all in the room, once again, it was for an audience of one, but he wanted to get across the message at the midterm elections of 2026. if things aren't going our way, we're sending in the military to stop the count.
Right.
And then the general's going to have to see, I took an oath of the office to the United States Constitution. Trump wants them to take an oath to him. What are the generals going to do? When he tried this after losing the 2020 election, thank God we had enough generals in there to say, we don't put American soldiers on the streets to go after citizens. Trump's trying to tell him, you better listen to what your president says and screw the Constitution. That's my fear of what's going to happen in November 2026.
All right. Well, I've got kind of less important, but it is part of the authoritarian strategy. James Comey was arraigned today, and he's being charged with lying to Congress, but it's vague because they're not saying what he said in the complaint or anything. The prosecution team is basically the Keystone Cops. Nobody in the eastern part of Virginia DOJ wants any part of it, so they had to bring in people from North Carolina. The woman who's in charge of it didn't even, you know, the first time she went in to file the complaint, she didn't even know what courtroom to walk in. It was really bad. And then filed the wrong document. And there are problems with the case. The first two motions are going to be possibly it has to be dismissed because she hasn't been properly hired and her name is on the complaint because nobody on the DOJ wanted to sign it. So she may not have been properly appointed. The second is whether it's a vindictive prosecution and they are going to use Trump's own social media posts as evidence of that. So my prediction is, and by the way, they set the matter for trial already because Comey as a defendant is entitled to a speedy trial. So it's set, I believe, for January 5th. The prosecution is saying, well, we've got discovery to do. And don't you want, we're going to be sending you lots of discovery. And don't you want to, and Patrick Fitzgerald, veteran attorney, prosecuted Obama, Bin Laden, and the rest said, no, we don't care. We'll be ready for it because it's a BS prosecution. No, we want to get this done. And the prosecution is kind of flipping out because what Trump really wanted was the indictment. I don't think they're looking forward to the trial. My prediction is this is going to end in a fiasco for the prosecution, and it's going to be really embarrassing.
Cue Benny Hill show music.
All right. We'll see if any of that comes true. Until next time, stay informed and stay
engaged. Next week, keep those shots flying.